Welcome to a heart-pounding episode of Tax Crime Junkies, where today we'll pull back the curtain on a meticulously orchestrated IRS sting operation. In the case of the cautious preparer, we dive deep into the shadows of tax preparation, where the line between law and deception blurs. Join us as we reveal the story of Frank Kelly, an enrolled agent caught in the crosshairs of an undercover investigation that challenges everything we know about integrity, temptation, and the unseen battles waged, all in the name of tax compliance. Prepare to be drawn into a world of covert conversations, clandestine meetings, turning any ordinary tax season into a suspense-filled journey. We're going to turn your tax season into a suspense-filled journey so you get a little bit break. This is one episode you won't want to miss. Welcome back, tax crime junkies, to your favorite blend of number crunching and true crime sleuthing. I'm Dom.
And I'm Tom. Today, we're unraveling a story that takes us into the heart of Pennsylvania, into a case that challenges our understanding of the IRS, tax law, and the lengths some will go to challenge it. We're talking about Frank Kelly, an enrolled agent for nearly 35 years. You may have even had Frank as an instructor in a class. This story involves Frank in an unexpected way to those of us who know him in his professional life. And the other players in our story, they know him as U.S. V. Kelly.
You mentioned sitting in one of Frank's classes, Tom, and that's why today's case is so startling and such a big deal for our listeners. While we've been covering cases of parties we don't know, this case is a little different and includes one of our own. And I think it also covers every good tax accountant's fears. What if?
You know, you say one of our own, Dom, but we definitely have covered many corrupt tax accountants on this show.
All right. Yeah, I get it. That's right. You're right. But I guess when it hits this close to home, my thoughts are this. Number one, it's scary about what can happen and what we need to do to protect ourselves. And number two, it's easy for me anyway to see myself and my own actions in Frank's story. So I just take it as a stark reminder that anything could happen. It all started with a client of Frank's. In this case, and it's an auto repair shop. It's a business just like we all have, run by a man known in court documents as MP, but beneath the routine of car repairs and oil changes, MP had a plot simmering behind the scenes, one that would draw in Frank Kelly, a tax accountant caught in the crosshairs of the federal government.
Charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States, Kelly's case wasn't just a legal battle. It was a narrative about the fight for justice, the complexity of the tax law, and how easily one's life can be turned upside down by an indictment. And while today's episode lays the groundwork, detailing each twist and turn of the case, this is all leading up to something even more compelling. We have an exclusive interview with Frank Kelly himself, where he'll share firsthand his account of the ordeal, the toll it took on him and his business, and his perspective on the justice system.
I cannot wait for that interview to come up, Tom. It's a really, really good episode, so don't miss it. Because from the moment the grand jury indicted Kelly through the labyrinth of pretrial motions to the tension-filled courtroom where his fate was decided, we'll dissect what it takes to mount a defense in the face of overwhelming odds. And it really did seem overwhelming.
And let's not forget the jury, the unsung heroes of the judicial process, whose deliberation and verdict remind us of the power and responsibility that's resting in their hands. It's a deep dive into the essence of what it means to seek justice in America. But that's at the end of the story. Let's go to the beginning. The date is August 26th, 2020. A grand jury issues an indictment that puts Frank Kelly into the legal spotlight, marking the beginning of a case that would captivate followers of tax law and criminal justice alike.
Now, ultimately, Frank was charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States under the daunting shadow of U.S. Code Section 371, of course, Title 18. Kelly found himself at the heart of allegations that questioned the integrity of his tax preparation business and his role in what the government described as a scheme to obstruct the IRS. But like all court cases, we're trying to get to the bottom. Did he really commit conspiracy? The charges trace back to a seemingly inconspicuous auto repair shop in the center of Pennsylvania owned by MP. And this shop, like a lot of small businesses, and we've all seen them, operated on the fringe of formal employment practices. But as we would come to find out, it was the epicenter of our narrative.
Between 2010 and 2012, MP ran his business a bit unorthodox. He employed a few individuals, one of whom was his girlfriend at the time. MP paid his male employees in cash, keeping their earnings off the books, while compensating his girlfriend with checks. This dual approach to payroll was the first thread of a complex web that the IRS want to entangle.
And it wasn't just the payment methods that raised eyebrows. It was the total absence of tax withholdings, the lack of W-2 forms, the failure to report having employees on federal income tax returns, and the evasion of federal payroll taxes. And that's really what sets the stage for the IRS's case. Now, Tom, we've all encountered these small mom and pop businesses that have atrocious looking books. They don't keep proper payroll or inventory. And generally, they either just don't know all the requirements to run a business, or they just don't want to have to pay to have things done properly. I know I've talked and advised my share of people in this situation. What about you?
Absolutely. And they generally fall, at least in my experience, in two categories, ignorance and intentional, right? Some people just don't know. They're not great business people. They think they're keeping good records when they're not. Payroll's complicated. They don't know how to do it. And then on the other hand, you have the intentional individuals, the ones who don't do it, and they know they don't do it. And those are the people who are especially at risk of, for example, being criminally investigated by the IRS.
Absolutely. And then there's the factor that money plays in all of this decision-making process as well, because when you have a small business and you can't afford much, there tends to be this practice of cutting corners or skimping out on the bookkeeping and payroll tax procedures that are needed for every business. And many times on the compliance side of our work, we focus on what's necessary to, quote, get the deduction. I've had many people, in fact, at networking events or cocktail parties that ask about the case where they don't want to give someone a Form 1099 or they want to, quote, pay them under the table. But there's this fine line where tax reporting and complying with the tax laws are two different things. So for example, if a stranger comes up and asks me a question like that, depending on my frame of mind and how much information I have, I might be inclined to explain that the business isn't entitled to the deduction, for example, while not including, hey, you just can't go and do that, period. Some of it has to do with being polite. We're kind of being asked off-the-cuff advice, and we don't know the person or the situation or even the context. We don't know what the contextual background is that someone is asking.
That's right. And this is a great story to help us understand the risk we all take when we're answering impromptu questions. So you mentioned the IRS intervened, and boy, they sure did. The IRS launched a civil audit of MP's 2011 tax return, eventually expanding the scope to encompass the year before, 2010, the year after, 2012, not uncommon. It was during this time that MP sought the professional guidance of Frank Kelly. He had hired Frank to represent him in the audit. Frank had not prepared the returns in question. And Frank, unknowingly, stepped into a scenario fraught with legal and ethical pitfalls. As the IRS dug deeper, a narrative emerged. MP and Kelly, according to the indictment, conspired to deceive the IRS about the very existence of employees and the nature of payments made to MP's girlfriend.
And that's where we get into the court process to find out if, in fact, the indictment is true. Because the indictment paints a picture of deliberate misdirection. It alleges that during a pivotal meeting with the IRS agent conducting the audit on February 24th of 2014, that Frank outright lied, claiming MP had no employees during the audited period, and that payments to MP's girlfriend were merely gifts, thus not requiring proper payroll reporting. Now, this meeting wasn't an isolated incident. Kelly and MP supposedly doubled down on their deception in a subsequent conversation with the IRS, weaving a tale designed to obstruct and derail the agency's efforts to collect what was rightfully owed.
Before the IRS became aware of the situation, though, Frank began by offering advice and counsel. He was approached by MP, who had received the notice of examination. He agreed to represent him in the civil audit. And while Frank was not the preparer of these returns, he was very experienced, and after talking with MP, felt confident in his ability to handle the audit engagement.
He did, and Frank's from a small town in Pennsylvania, and when you've practiced in an area for so long, as Frank has, you get to know the names of various examiners and managers because you may have seen them a time or two in your work. Frank was doing over 1,250 tax returns a year.
That's sort of what you're paying for in representation as well. You know, your knowledge of the process, the ins and outs, your rapport with specific employees, you understand how they work, and can put your client's mind at ease and help them get through the audit as painlessly as possible. So Frank starts out like many of us do in the field. We review the tax returns under examination. We look at the books and records for that same period of time as well. We look at the supporting documentation that's being requested by the examiner. And Frank notices right away there is a difference from the tax to the books between what was reported on the tax return and what actually happened in the books of the business.
That's right. Contrary to what the tax return reported, which said there were no employees at all, MP did in fact have employees during that tax period. In fact, one of them was MP's girlfriend. So we've got a discrepancy. Again, not super uncommon in our line of work, either due to intentional cheating or just business naivety. We also know how to advise the client, provided, of course, that the client's being totally and completely forthcoming with us so that we can offer proper advice. If they don't give us the information that we need, our advice really can't be relied upon.
And this becomes a central point in the case, folks, because at the heart of this case is what was discussed behind closed doors. And in court, it's all about not what was actually said or advised, but what one can prove was said behind closed doors. Now, notice the language we've used in describing the case thus far. Frank was charged with conspiring with MP to defraud the United States, and that Frank agreed to lie to the IRS revenue agent during the audit, all around this employee issue. So Frank's saga begins in February 2014, with an indictment that would set off a legal battle over the truth of these allegations. A battle that would test Frank's resolve, question his professional ethics, and ultimately determine his fate in the eyes of the law. So we'll dive into the conspiracy, the legal arguments, and the defense's fight against the charges shortly here.
So the issue is this. If you're paying employees under the table, which appears to be the situation here, you are an employer, period. And by law, you're required to account for those wages. You're required to comply with all local, state, and federal employment laws, which means you withhold appropriate taxes and other withholdings. You issue a Form W-2 to the employee at the end of the year. Again, going back to the multiple perspectives each case can have, it's not just about providing your deductible expenses to preserve the tax benefit of those deductions. We have to also prove Section 162, that the expenses are ordinary and necessary for the business, and the business must comply with local, state, and federal payroll laws, which comes under our purview as it's connected to tax. Now, if your client's not being honest with you and doesn't disclose what the truth of the situation is, I don't see how a professional can be held accountable for that. And in fact, we can't, unless they prove that we aided or advised illegal advice. But think about that. I'm just putting myself in Frank's shoes. We review the notice. We ask to see supporting docs. We review the request list with the client. And when you get to the payroll section, if I ask my client, for example, do you have any employees? And the client says no, I don't know that I'm going to challenge that. Unless, for example, maybe there's a line item for payroll or something on the trial balance or income statement.
Initially, Frank Kelly, an MP, had just been accused of spinning a web of lies to the IRS. But as any seasoned tax crime aficionado knows, the devil is in the details, as you've pointed out, Dom. Was Frank Kelly aware that MP had employees, or was he merely repeating what MP told him as he spoke with the revenue agent? This is not only a collections issue, but then it spills into fraud, because the IRS would have you believe that Frank and MP were working together to concoct this fabrication of having no employees, i.e. the conspiracy at the heart of the charge.
Yeah, you're right, Tom. That is what the whole case is about. The indictment against Frank hinges on a fundamental accusation that he had conspired with MP to obstruct the IRS by falsifying the true nature of the employment at MP's auto repair shop. It's not just about dodging taxes, but it's about undermining the very foundation of the IRS's ability to collect.
And the IRS doesn't like that. If we believe Frank, MP came in, presented the notice of examination, explained to Frank he had no employees, and that is exactly what Frank relayed to the government. Now, MP claims to Frank that girlfriend just hangs around the shop and answers the telephone now and then. Frank hears this and says, okay, not an employee, so what are the payments to the girlfriend? No different than the payments that any other person might give to a girlfriend. The checks made payable to the girlfriend are just gifts and therefore not subject to withholding. This is what he advised MP, and in turn, what he relayed to the IRS revenue agent in April 2014 at the auto shop.
And I believe that girlfriend actually corroborated that fact as well. When interviewed by the IRS, the girlfriend indicated that the checks were made payable to her to, quote, support her and her children. So one question I have is, they met at the auto shop. I'm assuming there were no employees around that day, because it'd be super awkward if they all met there and the guys are all greasy and drilling stuff and rolling tires around.
You have no idea what goes on in a mechanic shop, do you?
Well, that's how Hollywood would show it. I think we have to assume not, because otherwise that would have been used in trial against Frank Kelly.
So the IRS says what happened at that meeting is both MP and Frank Kelly lied during that meeting and told the revenue agent that MP did not have any employees between 2010 and 2012, and he did not deduct any wages, and he only had gifts there going through his bank account. Those were also not deducted to his girlfriend. So I'm sure Frank was thinking that the interview went well. He gave them what they needed, showed them around, and felt like it was just like any other audit. But it wasn't just like any other audit, was it?
No, it wasn't. Once MP realized he was in big trouble, the story was changed a bit, so we diverge into two tales. In fact, once he got in trouble, MP says that what took place at these meetings between Kelly, MP, and the IRS agent was that Kelly allegedly made the first move in the conspiracy by denying the existence of any employees during the audit period. MP alleges that Frank Kelly said this first and told him to also state he had no employees to the agent.
But the plot thickens, junkies, because Kelly didn't stop at mere denials. MP says Frank advised the business owner to echo these falsehoods and coached him on what to say to the IRS. So it wasn't just about misrepresenting the facts. It was about creating a united front of deception. So they're having this three-way conversation that solidified the conspiracy, and that's what's needed to actually prove that charge of conspiracy. Kelly and MP presented a united front to the IRS. They repeated the lies they had concocted, and it was a bold strategy, one that relied on the IRS acceptance of their narrative so that they could avoid paying federal payroll taxes. And what's particularly intriguing here is the dual nature of the lie. On one hand, they denied the existence of employees. On the other, they claimed that payments to MP's girlfriends were gifts rather than wages. It was a calculated attempt to exploit loopholes and ambiguities in the tax.
These actions, according to the indictment, were not mere oversights or mistakes. They were deliberate steps taken to further the conspiracy to, quote, obstruct and defeat the IRS in its assessment and collection of federal payroll taxes, unquote. But as any legal battle teaches us, allegations are only one side of the story. Kelly's defense would paint a different picture, challenging the narrative constructed by the prosecution and arguing for a deeper understanding of the facts. And it's this back and forth, this clash of narratives and interpretations of law, that makes tax crime cases so compelling. Each side presents its version of the truth, but in the end, it's up to the jury to sift through the evidence and decide whom to believe.
Right. A jury of peers, fellow lay people, not even necessarily business owners. They are tasked, if you think about it, with learning the law as it has been explained, and then they have to try to determine what actually happened. They have to somehow weigh the evidence they had to navigate through complex tax laws. They have to dissect whether witnesses are credible and then ultimately decide on Kelly's fate. And as the case against Frank Kelly unfolded, the courtroom became a battleground where legal theories were tested and the principles of justice were scrutinized. What's the heart of the legal drama? Kelly's motion to dismiss the indictment. Frank's truth led him to contend he was not going down without a fight.
Now, ordinarily, if we look at the tax court, just as an example, which of course is a civil court, 99% of cases settle out of court. There is no trial. Now, in tax court, that means about 1% do go to trial. And I'm sure Frank, during the pendency of this case in district court, was made some offers. And we will actually ask him about that in our next episode. But he was adamant he wanted to clear his name. Frank claims it wasn't until MP was in big trouble that his story completely changed. And it was MP's criminal defense attorney that approached the government with this claim of fraudulent advice and conspiracy.
Yeah, nice timing on that, by the way. It's all good until you get caught, and then quick, blame the overworked accountant. Side note, I've had that happen to me before, but thankfully the IRS could see right through the claims, and I had excellent written documentation of what I advised the client each meeting.
And I'm sure that really protected you, Dawn. Sometime after the civil audit was concluded, MP's criminal defense lawyer says that Frank was bragging to him that he knew, in fact, that MP did have employees between 2010 and 2012, and he took credit for limiting the damage a lot during the examination.
And let me guess, he was offered a deal, a get-out-of-jail-free card?
How did you know? MP's attorney offered to have MP testify against Frank in exchange for a due sentence. How kind of him.
Ah, yes, to get that dirty accountant who's really at fault. And just what was in it for this so-called dirty accountant, Tom?
Well, I guess just to be liked by MP or for the $500 he made on the engagement.
Now, to me, if you ask me, that piece is evidence in itself. If Frank's committing conspiracy, what did Frank have to gain by conspiring to defraud the government with MP? We know what MP's gain is. He's in trouble. He's looking at prison time. On top of the employee issue, MP conveniently had left out his 1099 reporting from the credit card company and had understated his income by like $300,000. So to believe MP, Frank, I guess, takes a liking to this guy that he doesn't know and just wants to help him out. No windfall in it for himself. I guess he's just wired that way to help with fraud as the solution.
So that's up to the jury to decide and up to the prosecution to prove. The evidence was laid bare, witness testimonies echoed through the room, and the legal strategies of both sides were put to the ultimate test.
So remember, junkies, the prosecution bore the heavy burden of proving Kelly's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Since this is a criminal case as opposed to a civil case, government bears the burden. So they presented evidence of the meetings with the IRS, which consisted of notes from the examiner, the alleged lies about employee status, and the supposed scheme to classify wages as gifts. But evidence in court isn't just about presenting facts. It's about persuasion. It's about painting a narrative, a story that convinces the jury of one's argument. The prosecution aimed to weave a story of deliberate deception, a conspiracy to defraud the government that's orchestrated by Kelly and MP. And remember, you have to have both parties in a case of conspiracy. At the end of the day, it's often the better storyteller that wins the case.
The defense, on the other hand, has a very different story to tell. They challenged the reliability and motives of the government's witnesses, especially those who had entered plea agreements or received benefits for their testimony. This strategy aimed to sow seeds of doubt in the jurors' minds, and it was allowed. Of course, the government challenged and objected to the admission of this kind of evidence, but in the end, the court sided with Frank and allowed the deal to come in as proof that MP was motivated to lie.
And let's not forget the legal instructions provided to the jury. That's also instruction on the law. They were reminded that prior inconsistent statements by witnesses can be considered not for their truth, but as a tool to evaluate credibility. It's up to the jurors to dissect whether these inconsistencies were mere lapses in memory or deliberate falsehoods.
The defense also underscored the complexity of the tax law, arguing that the distinction between wages and gifts could genuinely confuse and that Kelly's advice was based on a reasonable interpretation of the law and that there was no intent to defraud. But that's not all the government had up its sleeve. Dom, they had the sting operation evidence.
The sting operation? This just got a lot more exciting.
So it would appear the government was concerned about its ability to prove Frank committed conspiracy to commit fraud. So as the IRS will do sometimes, they sent two undercover agents posing as new prospective clients to Frank's office to record him to see if he would commit a federal crime on tape.
Now, the recording begins on a crisp October day in 2019 in Frank Kelly's office. The undercover agent posing as Bob Evans.
Yeah, like the restaurant? That's a strange name, right?
Wow, that's almost a giveaway right there, Tom. Bob Evans noticed the popcorn machine sitting dormant after the die down of tax season and talking with Frank and his office coworkers about it. And little did Frank know that this meeting would be anything but ordinary. Bob tells him he's a painter by trade. He's grappling with an IRS audit that threatened to unravel his financial life. And Evans was no ordinary client. He was the bait in a sting operation designed to test Kelly's integrity and his adherence to the law. Now, think about this. This is in 2019. And the case with MP happened back in 2014. Now, you know, Frank does over 1,000 tax returns a year. How many tax returns now? That's 5,000 returns that have passed by
right
in the meantime between when MP comes in and now he has Bob Evans sitting in front of him.
Right. So Bob, quote unquote, presented Kelly with a scenario peppered with red flags, unreported income, questionable deductions, including failing to give his quote-unquote girlfriend a Form 1099. He also had the specter of an IRS audit looming over. The conversation, of course recorded, was a dance of wits and wills, but Frank was professional and listened to Bob as he spun his tale of tax woes, missing 1099s and ATM withdrawals that blurred the lines between business expenses and personal indulgences. Yet Frank's response was measured, rooted in caution, and stringently adhered to the tax law.
Yeah, he's on tape, Tom, saying what kind of documentation the person really needs. And that emphasizes that need and the importance, in fact, of the documentation during an audit. And he also asks, what about these payments to Sharon Fuller? Who is this? The UC, the undercover, inquired. It was a veiled reference to payments to his girlfriend. He was masquerading the payments as business expenses. Personal, Kelly corrected, unless you issued a W-2 or 1099.
So as the meeting unfolded, the undercover agent tried to lure Frank into endorsing questionable deductions or fabricating expenses to reduce the tax burden. Frank stayed unflappable, guiding the agent through the labyrinth of tax law with precision of someone who's been doing this for 35 years.
Absolutely. And in fact, we hear Frank on those calls cite code and talk about what kind of documentation is needed. What was argued in court is this disagreement about whether or not the payments to the girlfriend were personal or wages. And in this case, he set up with this question of, hey, what do I do with these payments to my girlfriend? Well, Kelly automatically responded, this is a personal gift unless you gave a W-2 or 1099. I think one other question that could have been asked was, does she actually work in the business? Because without really knowing the answer to that question, it's hard to render a conclusion about whether it's personal or business. But working with the information that Kelly had, he gave appropriate advice. You know, listen, unless she's working for you, unless you gave a W-2, 1099, it's personal. So the operation reaches its climax with a phone call from the IRS. And the IRS that's calling is also an undercover. So undercover calls Frank a couple of days later. Frank Mason is the false identity of the other undercover agent. And he wanted to confirm the details of the information that Frank Kelly faxed in response to the notice. So Kelly reiterated the need for honesty and accuracy. He unwittingly solidified his role in this so-called elaborate charade to conspire to commit fraud by bringing up, you've got to be honest and accurate.
Right.
He answered questions from the undercover about mileage deductions. The undercover wanted to see a log, and Frank said he would try to get it to him. The agent asked about the payments to the girlfriend. Remember this, 5 years and over 5,000 or 6,000 tax returns after Frank's engagement with MP, yet Frank still replied, no payroll, no employees, no sir, and indicated that the payments to Sharon Fuller were in fact personal draws from the business, not deductible. In fact, here is Frank in a reenactment of the conversation using transcripts of the recording.
So I got this letter. Ironically enough, his name's Frank too. Haha. Hopefully you're not related by the first name.
Can I see it, please? I'm going to tell you now, you're going to owe them money without even looking at it. Yeah. I guess you're in Pittsburgh, huh?
Really? I do. I live in Pittsburgh. My girlfriend's from out around here, so we're out here every few weeks, at least once a month. We're actually thinking about maybe moving out here. That's a whole nother situation, though, if I go down that path. You from here originally?
Actually, Altoona. Spent about 7 years in Altoona.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
I was originally from, like, up in Cambria County.
So you've not called, have you?
I called him once and said, you know, what's going on? And he's like, well, you know, I need to sit down with you. And I said, well, I'm gonna...
Do you have your tax return?
I do.
Can I see it, please?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna tell you now, you're gonna owe them money without even looking at it.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell you right now.
All right.
You're gonna owe them money.
All right.
That number is a flag because it's too round.
Okay.
Supplies? Yeah. You're going to lose this auto deduction.
All of it, you think, or?
All of it.
Really?
Unless you have a log showing where you went, when you went. Because typically speaking.
Okay, yeah.
When you leave the house and go to the paint store.
Yeah.
That mileage is non-deductible.
Oh.
When you leave the paint store, go to the job, to the last job, that mileage is all deductible. From the last job home is personal. Those two are what's called commuting.
Okay.
And they're non-deductible.
Okay.
So I guarantee you, you're going to lose some of that. If you have no log, you're going to lose it all.
This moment, junkies, encapsulates the suspense of the undercover operation. It's not just about the potential for criminal activity. It's a profound look at the ethical dilemmas faced by tax professionals day in and day out.
Yes, we don't often see our work that way, but we do. We have those choices. And so this topic brings us back to the curious case of MP, who found himself entangled in legal scrutiny after claiming he paid his girlfriend with checks for working in his business. That's what he claimed. Only later to assert that those payments were gifts, not wages.
It's a fascinating scenario, Dominique, because under the tax law, wages are payments for services performed by an employee for their employer. They are subject to income tax withholding, Social Security tax, and Medicare tax.
Right, Tom. And for the payment to be considered a wage, there has to be an employer-employee relationship, where the employer has control over what will be done and how it will be done by the employee.
Exactly. Now, on the flip side, we have gifts. And a gift is essentially something given with no expectation of return, no quid pro quo. There's no expectation of anything. They're not considered taxable income to the recipient. And most of the time, they don't require any kind of report reporting for the giver of the gift as long as they are under a certain annual or lifetime threshold.
Right. So that brings us to the heart of MP's dilemma. By initially paying his girlfriend with business checks for her work, it suggests an employer-employee relationship. Legally, those payments should be treated as wages with all the accompanying tax responsibilities.
But here's where he stirred the pot. By later claiming they were gifts, he entered a gray area. If they were indeed for personal reasons and not for the services performed, they shouldn't be subject to employment taxes.
However, Tom, the IRS doesn't just take someone's word for it in these situations. They look at substance over form. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. In MP's case, if the payments were for work performed, calling them gifts doesn't change their nature as wages. They're still wages.
And that's where the legal battles begin. Taxpayers must tread carefully. Misclassifying wages as gifts can lead to an examination, penalties, and as seen in MP's case, as part of criminal charges for tax evasion, fraud, or conspiracy.
So it's a cautionary tale for all of us, you, me, and our listeners, whether you're running a business or managing personal finance. Understanding the legal distinctions and tax implications of payments is crucial.
Absolutely, Dom. And for anyone navigating these waters, consulting with a qualified tax professional isn't just advisable, it is a necessity. Frank's defense hinged on a critical argument. The indictment failed to state an offense that met the legal requirements for a conspiracy to defraud the United States. His legal team wasn't just challenging the facts. They were challenging the very foundation of the prosecution's case.
To understand what's going on in the defense's strategy, it's really essential to grasp what the law requires for a conspiracy charge. It's going to require two people that are making an agreement together. So the indictment needed to allege that an agreement had been made to defraud the United States. Now, that is an overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy and that intent to defraud. So in providing advice, even if the advice was in error, which was Frank's claim, how is that a conspiracy? If he gave incorrect advice, he gave incorrect advice. And being mistaken is not the same thing as committing fraud, or in this case, a conspiracy.
Kelly argued that his actions, specifically his advice to MP regarding the IRS audit, were based on a misinterpretation of the facts, not a deliberate attempt to deceive. He even pointed to previous tax court decisions, for example, Yang v. Commissioner, to underline the complexity of distinguishing between wages and gifts.
Now, the defense painted a picture of Frank Kelly as a professional navigating the murky waters of tax law. This is the stuff we do every single day. He wasn't considered a conspirator scheming against the IRS. Defense contended that Frank Kelly's advice to MP was grounded in a legitimate, albeit mistaken, understanding of the tax implications of the payments made to the girlfriend.
And, you know, the thing we have to realize with any time you represent a client in an audit, right, you can take positions that are potentially uncertain. That's allowed under the law, right? We only generally need, for most positions in the tax law, a reasonable basis, which means, honestly, only a 25 to 30% chance of being eventually upheld, right? So as long as we have tax law that we can hang our hat on and we have a reasonable basis for the positions we take, even if they're later found to not be true, that's fine. But in this case, the government went even a step further to say that even though your interpretation of it was wrong, that wrong interpretation was seriously, I can't believe this still, a conspiracy to defraud the United States. It just seems unbelievable that they would have gone down that route. And after days of deliberation, the moment of truth eventually arrived, and the jury returned with their verdict. Frank Kelly was acquitted of all charges. It's very rare for the government to lose a criminal tax case. It was a dramatic conclusion to a trial that had captured the attention of tax professionals and legal enthusiasts alike.
I think, though, Tom, this case raises a lot of questions about the nature of justice, the challenges of proving intent in complex financial crimes, and also the role of the jurors in navigating these complexities. It is really startling. And when I first heard about this case, it's really terrifying to think that your client can turn on you, but they have all the reasons in the world to do so. In this case, when MP is looking at multiple years in prison and excessive multiple six-figure penalties, you know, that's something that's really hard to dig out from. And if your cousin lawyer, I can't help but think of my cousin Vivi in this
right.
case, because the lawyer turned out to be his cousin. But, you know, for your attorney to come up with the brilliant of idea of, hey, let's approach the government and volunteer to do a sting operation, blame it all on the accountant. It is scary. And it sent ripples through the legal community and beyond. It wasn't just a victory for Frank. It was a case that highlighted the intricate dance between law, justice, and the complexities of tax regulation.
Today, we're reflecting on what this case means for the future. For tax professionals, it is a stark reminder of the scrutiny they can face, especially when representing taxpayers, and the paramount importance of clarity, documentation, and 100% adherence to the tax law and our ethical standards in practice.
And I think it also highlights the importance, Tom, of having enough context and information with which to answer these questions.
Yes.
We cannot provide answers to questions that have more than one possibility as an answer, as a correct answer.
Right.
And I think we feel a lot of pressure to do so because someone approaches us and says, hey, I got a quick question for you. Or they want off-the-cuff advice when you don't have a full idea of the scenario.
Absolutely. And let's talk about the implications for individuals facing the IRS. You know, Kelly's case demonstrates the potential for legal battles that can arise from audits. And it highlights the need for competent representation. But it also underscores what can be a very gray line between what I'll call assertive tax planning and actions that could actually be construed as an attempt to defraud the United States.
I think Frank has had the facts on his side in this case, Tom, because it really doesn't even seem from the evidence provided that the government proved an intent to defraud.
Oh, no.
Fraud. And I'm glad that the jury saw through that. But Frank Kelly's acquittal raises questions about the threshold for that criminal intent in these tax fraud cases. It challenges attorneys, prosecutors, and defense attorneys to consider not just the letter of the law, but the nuances of interpretation, intent, and evidence. And I think putting that into perspective of a tax accountant's daily life, painting the picture where you've got someone in business for 35 years, somebody who does over 1,000 tax returns a year, who can quote tax law from the back of his head, is this somebody that is most likely to tell a stranger that they should conspire to lie to the IRS?
That's right. And for our listeners, this case is a reminder of the drama and complexities hidden within the tax code and in courtrooms across the country. It's a testament to the ongoing battle between differing interpretations of the law, the pursuit of justice, and the realities of the legal system.
And it's these stories, these deep dives into the heart of legal battles that remind us of the human element in every case. Frank Kelly's story is one of resilience, of a fight for vindication in the face of overwhelming odds. And that's why I'm so excited to have Frank on as a guest, because he really does humanize this story for us. And that wraps up our deep dive into U.S. v. Frank Kelly. But don't think for a moment that the story ends here.
Oh, far from it, Dom, because next time, again, we're bringing you something very special, an exclusive interview with the man himself, Frank Kelly. You've heard the legal breakdown, the courtroom drama, and the verdict. Now you will hear the story from Frank's own mouth, from start to finish, and what his experience was.
That's right, Tom. Frank is going to share his personal journey through the trial, the challenges he faced, and also the aftermath of his acquittal, because let's not kid ourselves, this can have a big impact on our practices. It's really a rare opportunity to get an inside look at both the emotional and the psychological toll of being at the center of a legal battle just like this.
And we'll also dive into what life looks like for Kelly now, how this experience has changed him, and his advice for anyone who might find themselves in a similar situation. This is an episode you cannot miss.
So mark your calendars and subscribe if you haven't subscribed already, full of insights, reflections, and maybe even a few surprises along the way. Frank was a really good sport.
Exactly. Until then, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep seeking the truth. We're Dom and Tom, and we've been listening to Tax Crime Junkies.
Stay curious, and we'll see you next time for our exclusive interview with Frank Kelly.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We're happy you decided to join us, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even share it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until then, remember that every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.